present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a notice spotted by a pool at Mogambo Falls, Honeymoon Springs, read by Charlotte Green.
Open 24 hours. Lifeguard on duty 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Drowning strongly discouraged.
Oh, thanks to Louise Barrett for sending that in. Let's meet the teams now. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Clive Anderson. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, here's a brain twister for you. Who thinks leadership is beyond our Kennedy?
Well, I think it's our former colleague on this programme, Charlie Kennedy, isn't it? In the papers this week, they all called him Chat Show Charlie, which is not true. He was News Quiz Charlie.
He was very good, too.
And he was very good.
Until I've interviewed him on chat shows.
Well, he's been on more news quizzes than chat shows. I think you'll find. And then one day, I remember it was at the end of a series at Christmas, we had dinner, and he said he was going off to better himself and go and run the Liberal Democrats. I knew it was a mistake. And it went into tears, and so it is. But we'll welcome him back in the new year when he's been sacked as Lib Dem leader, as he will be, because his MPs are all being horrible about him. But he had a meeting with... He's fighting them off. He's doing a very good job. He's rather like John Major standing against himself for the leadership about 10 years ago.
I think it's so unfortunate. I think he's very popular in the country. It's just that the Liberal MPs don't like him because they can't imagine him being a Prime Minister. But in the country, we don't care because we can't imagine any Liberal leader being Prime Minister. So he's as good as anybody else. He's a rather amiable chap.
I was trying to think of an apposite simile to describe Liberal Democrat infighting. I got as far as it's like two vegans fighting over the last rice cracker in the health shop. And then I was defeated because I actually thought I couldn't better it's like infighting in the Liberal Democrat.
Actually, Jorge Luis Borges, I think, came up with the best description. It's like two bald men fighting over a comb.
Yeah. But on this particular panel, that's tasteless, so we don't want to...
I was listening to PM the other day because I'd been listening to News Round, but I just found it a bit full on and intellectually taxing. So I turned over to PM instead, and Susan Cramer came on, and the jolly one who tried to be mayor of London in the red boots. And she was talking about other Liberal leaders who'd had a bad time off the media. She said, you know, we had this sort of thing, you know, with Paddy Ashdown and with David Steele and with Jeremy. Anyway, you weren't going to mention that one for sure. I mean, I know it's not true, that whole thing about Jeremy Thorpe, because Jeremy Thorpe's still alive and they're a court.
This is a news quiz. Which particular week's news are we dealing with? Because we seem to have gone back in time.
Sorry, carry on.
Charlie, good. Our first
try out some of my new Campbell Bannerman material.
Our first leadership question of the week concerned the dynamic Liberal head honcho Charles Kennedy. He's had to fight off a leadership challenge this week from his fellow MPs. Senior figures within the party say they will produce a suitable platform for Mr. Kennedy to stand on, just as soon as they finish putting in the trapdoor and gibbet. 2 points to Francis. Clive, where was there no smoke without fire, and plenty of fire without foam?
Oh, dear, this is the old rhyme, isn't it? Red sky at night, Hemel Hempstead's alight. It was black sky in the morning, the oil is still burning. No, it's the biggest explosion since the war in Europe, and it could be heard as far away as France, and they surrendered just in case. No, this is not something to laugh at. It's a big oil tank in Hemel Hempstead, and a casual match or a lorry being switched on too quickly or anything could happen around things, and it's gone off, poof, like that. And there's a huge pall of smoke which has wiped up Slough or something dreadful like that.
It was a triumph for, yes, Prescott, John Prescott. The government announced he was taking personal charge of it, and the fire went out.
He's the new Red Adair. He went. he blew it out with one huge...
I know when I throw open my window on Sunday morning, because they told me about this, and I could see this huge black cloud over London moving slowly one way and then the other, the image of Gordon Brown came into my head, and I don't know why, but this sense of this huge cowpat lying over.
A series of explosions at the Bunsfield oil depot started the biggest fire ever in peacetime Europe. Meteorologists admitted that Britain had been lucky. Without a southerly wind, the toxic cloud would have taken a lot longer to reach France. 2 points to Clive. Jeremy, who says we can trust him to keep the economy in the black, even on Wednesdays?
I used to like when the privately educated... The only justification for private education is it used to produce people who spoke like Francis. And now, Etonians and Harrovians and people from Fettes and Gordonstoun and they all speak entirely without consonants in this sort of... Oh, hi, oh, I'm going to leave the Tory Party. It's going to be like wicked. Like, great. Oh, I've seen my skateboard. Like, what me? Oh. At least you could respect them. They said, hello, I am the leader of the Conservative Party. You will do as I say because I have beautiful diction. But anyways, the fat boy who's taken over the Tories is... trying to play down the fact that he worked with Norman Lamont and the unfortunately named Black Wednesday when Britain fell out of the ERM, which sounds like an amusing incident on a beach. And there was Norman Lamont thinking, I wonder what General Pinochet would do in these circumstances.
In our second leadership question of the week, David Cameron assured business leaders in London that the Tories could be trusted with the economy and had learned their lessons from Black Wednesday, when the pound fell out of the European exchange rate mechanism. 1992 was a very difficult year for David Cameron. Black Wednesday was quickly followed by Black Thursday, when he learned the truth about Santa Claus.
He keeps doing all this stuff. Like, I mean, surely they learnt their lesson, because they used to make, what's his name, Judas? Who was the jolly one who was rubbish? Hague. He used to be made to do these stunts, but who's that woman, that Aussie girl, who's...
Amanda Platel.
Yeah, I don't think she's a bad person. I think she's just a bit lonely. But she used to sort of make Hague do these ridiculous things, like go to the anarchist book fair dressed as Bakunin. Poor old William Hague. And they're doing it. They're doing it with Cameron. He's just sort of going around, sort of shaking hands with black people, saying, big up to the Negroes.
But he went to Notting Hill for the carnival, Hague, and certain images stay in the head forever. It's like Thumper sliding across the ice. I remember Hague being forced to eat a watermelon, and these two immensely bald things had come together for a Daily Mail moment, and one disappeared into the other.
On Wednesday, David Cameron chose Birmingham as the venue for his first shadow cabinet meeting. On visiting the inner city, Cameron kept up his tradition of removing his tie while some youngsters helped him with his watch, his wallet and his mobile.
David Davis asked some young people if they were chilling, to which they should have replied, not half as chilling as you are.
Alan, listen to this. Alan, which rebels are hoping to educate their leader?
Jeremy tells me that was David Bowie.
It was.
All that singing. In the 70s.
And inventor of a bloody good knife, if I might say so. You never saw The Iron Mistress, a film with Alan Ladd playing Jim Bowie, and he invents the knife. But because Alan Ladd was only about 3 foot tall, the knife is the size of an extremely small Swiss Army penknife. And it wouldn't have threatened anyone. I think you're talking about the Labour backbenchers.
I think
who are now being frozen out by David Cameron, who is agreeing to everything in order to embarrass Blair. Mm-hmm. And Cameron, whatever kind of policy, you want to bring back borstals, you want to hang people in public schools, you want an 11 plus for paedophiliacs, we will do that. Yes, we are with you. And Blair is stuck in this no-man's land, in this open trench, being enfiladed by the Tory party and his backbenchers, and he's got to go with one side or the other. Well, the rebels are just waiting to rebel over something. I mean, happy...
Rebel. You said the rebels are waiting to rebel over something.
Yeah, well, it's always rebel without a cause in our house.
That's not clear from the title of the film. It could be rebel...
Rebel without a cause.
It could be, couldn't it?
Changes the whole...
Exactly.
Except, actually, it's
imagine
not,
the Peasants'
it's not
Revolt all arriving in Blackheath and going... Oh, nothing.
Well, you can do that with anything. You can do Gone with the Wind, Gone with the Wind, Gone with the Wind, Gone with the Wind.
Frankly, yeah. Alan, I couldn't give a damn.
Francis has got...
Okay.
In our third leadership story of the week, Tony Blair is facing difficulties over his education reforms after 59 normally loyal MPs produced their own alternative education white paper. Government wants schools to be allowed to alter the curriculum to fit their pupils. If the pupils are sporty, there'll be more sports lessons. If the pupils are arty, there'll be more arts lessons. And if the pupils are dilated, there'll be regular drug screenings. The end of round one. Everybody has 4 points. And we start round two with a cutting from the Sunday Times sports section.
From his left midfield position, the graceful Belarusian Alexander Hleb struck up an understanding with Thierry Henry that bodes well for the future. Several times he picked out the striker with intelligent balls.
Thanks to Christopher Davis for that. Francis, why is a clean bill of health proving far too expensive?
Dirty hospitals?
Yes.
They've been doing spot checks on hospitals, and there's some dust on some of the surfaces, especially those high, hard-to-reach ones. Well, it's because they privatised all the cleaning and sold it off to these companies who had to tender for it, and the one that got the lowest tender won the contract, and so they said, we'll do it for tuppence, by the simple expedient of employing one cleaner. But oddly enough, this cleaner hasn't been able to cover every hospital in the land. So people are now dying of PS2 or whatever it's called. What is it? MRSA, is that it?
Sat-nav. It's got nothing to do with that. I mean, this blaming of Filipino and Eritrean contract cleaners is totally wrong. MRSA is cross-infection. You get it from people coming to visit you, carrying grapes from more than one country of origin. MRSA is a bacterial infection.
MRSA, I thought that was the qualification the doctor had. I didn't realise it was an infection I was picking up.
Two-thirds of NHS and private hospitals in England are failing to meet the highest standards of cleanliness. Medical campaigners claim the results do not give patients the information they need, like directions to the nearest airport and a list of the best hospitals on the continent. 2 points to Francis Clive, who has finally admitted to faulty intelligence.
I think this might be George Bush. It's sort of a news story, this. It's apparently, the intelligence which led to us going to war in Iraq, apparently it wasn't quite right. And there weren't weapons. This is going to be a shock to you. There were no weapons of mass destruction there, so there was no special reason for going. But I think he's describing it really as a fault on the right side. So I think so the BBC doesn't be accused of any anti-bias on this. You know, there's a happy election going on this week, though that may seem a bit odd if you're listening to the repeat when things have started to go wrong again. But but anyway, I think he's about the last person to accept that the intelligence might be wrong.
I thought it was God told him to attack Iraq. In which case, is he saying that God lied to him? Or did God just not go into specifics? God said, I want you to attack Iraq. And he said, why, O Lord? He said, look, questions. I had this with the whole Abraham and Isaac thing.
He thinks he's got a direct line to God, but actually I think what happened was he tried to contact God and got this message saying, your call is important to us. So he never got the direct word.
We should say to God, actually, look, be careful what you say to this man. Say what you like to Cliff Richard. But, you know... Maybe God was acting on faulty intelligence, in which case we have to look to Gabriel to find out.
I think he was relying a bit on the CIA, though, wasn't he? And
God was.
Not God, no. George Bush.
George Bush justified the invasion of Iraq while admitting that much of the pre-war intelligence was wrong. In his speech, Bush acknowledged he was probably one of the least popular people in Iraq. But then, they haven't met Princess Michael of Kent yet. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, who's faked their way to a fortune?
Well, there's two scams in the news. One is the X Factor scam. You only have to listen to X Factor to know that extraordinary rendition can mean torture.
I think it's more the other
one. Not that one. It's the other one. Well, some people, some scammers, stole the identity of civil servants. And it sounds like a horrible idea. I mean, it must be horrible when your identity's been stolen. We've all had those days, haven't we? when you wake up in the morning, you think, oh, I just don't know who I am anymore, really. And then you see out the corner of your eye, there's a burglar making off with your video and your raison d'etre. Out of the back window. It doesn't take much to steal. So, because if you've got, you know, if you're with Wannadoo or Vodafone or British Gas, all they ask to identify you is, can you tell us your date of birth and, for a special secret, your mother's maiden name? If you were in one of those films like Martin Guerre or Somersby, or if you're in a Shakespearean comedy, the hilarious ones with the twins who are identical, and somebody said, if you truly are who you say you are, then only you will know the answer to this question. When were you born? I just... if nobody else knew your date of birth, you wouldn't get any cards, would you?
The identities of up to 10,000 civil servants have been stolen by criminals to make thousands of fraudulent claims for family tax credit. Massive tax fraud was perpetrated by a notorious criminal gang led by a dangerous Scottish psychopath known only as the Chancellor.
It's going to be a very dour period with Gordon Brown as Prime Minister, isn't it?
This is like being on the news because of Doctor Who. We go back in time and then we go forward in time. Can we do with this week's news? Okay.
At the end of round two, everybody has 8 points. Before we start round three, here's a road sign found in America.
LW Mortgage and Son, Inc. Septic tanks pumped. Swimming pools filled. Not the same truck.
Our thanks to James Newing for sending that in. Francis, which Pacific species has proved itself very canny?
Yes? We know the answer, but it's not our question. It's,
This is a tuna.
It's a big fish. And they put an electronic thing on it, and they've discovered that it doesn't hang around in the waters off San Francisco, which they thought it might do, but it goes to Tokyo and back regularly, like it's a virgin stewardess or something, and swims miles and miles and miles, and they don't know why it does this. That it could be, it's just that it doesn't like this electronic thing on its back, and it's just trying to get away from it. But I've seen the story, but I'm not sure if it's true, because the person doing this research is said to be called Ron O'Dor. And the only other person from that family one's ever heard of is Patty O'Dor, who features in jokes about Irish double glazing. So I don't know. But if it's true, it turns out we may not have as many tuna in the world as we thought, because they're being counted on both sides of the Pacific.
Why did they put an electronic tag on a tuna? Was it graffiti or something? Is that, what had it done? Had it worn a hoodie in a shopping centre or something? Because you have to buy the ones that are friendly to dolphins, don't you?
Yes.
What, the tuna? Say, hello. The ones that are on nodding terms with dolphins. Those ones that give them a dirty look. You don't be eating them ones.
He's got a name, hasn't he? He's called, is it Terry? Yeah.
Terry the tuna. And the other one they tagged was Nicole the great white shark. Can you imagine the indignity of being a great white shark? People think, oh, don't mess with this one. Mm. And you say, what's your name? He goes, Nicole.
Well, presumably it's a female shark, so they had to give it a girl's name. I mean, that's
only
fair.
Yeah, but when it's biting your leg off, you don't check to see how long they spend getting ready, do you? You just think...
It's obviously named after Nicole Kidman. You can imagine being savaged to death. Was it just me?
Oh, you did. I don't fancy Nicole Kidman.
Don't you?
No. Doesn't I find her a bit wispy. You know what I mean? She's a bit sort of simple. She's a bit like Gwyneth Paltrow, a bit sort of pretty, but a bit vague and wet. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's an ideal thing to name a shark after, isn't it?
This is the 25,000-mile epic voyage of Terry the Tuna, which was witnessed by scientists using electronic tags to track fish. Scientists have electronically tagged thousands of underwater species following the introduction of Labour's Underwater Respect white paper. Clive, listen to this.
Let the wind blow high, let the wind blow low, through the streets in my kit I'll go. All the lassies say hello, Donald, where's your trousers? Donald, where's your trousers?
Clive, why are trousers getting bigger north of the border?
Oh, no, this is a shock report. Apparently, this is good news for trousers manufacturers and kilt manufacturers that children north of the border in Scotland are the fattest in the world. They've now surpassed Americans, English people, everybody. Most Scottish children's ambition now is just to get through a door first time. It's just... it's dreadful. I've several children of my own who are quite slim, and I take them to Scotland a lot, just try and fatten them up, so we go and eat deep-fried Mars bars and haggises and things, and Iron Brew and all these things, not which is a commercial product, they can't be implicated in the fattening of children, obviously, but this is... anyway, so it's bad news, and something has to be done about it, like more exercise and less sweets.
We could start hunting them, of course, because they'd enjoy it, and it's more humane than shooting them. And let's face it, they wouldn't stand much chance of getting away.
It's an obesity time bomb, they call it, which is a horrible image if you think about it.
No, it's not. I think you'll find it's an obesity world title. They should be very proud of themselves. They're leading the world in something.
It's the role, it's grandparents, isn't it? It's people working too hard, leaving grandparents to raise their children. That's the one. Oh, don't listen to your mother and father. They know nothing about nutrition. Let me inject this lard straight into your colon. Oh, granny knows best, doesn't she? Oh, just have some more pork for your heart.
New statistics published this week show that a third of Scottish 12-year-olds are overweight and a fifth of them are obese. Fat kids are much more likely to contract serious illnesses, but on the plus side, fat kids also bounce back much more quickly. Jeremy, who knows the word on the street because they made it up?
This is about slang. A researcher at the University of Lancashire Polytechnic has discovered, they've been doing tests on young people that prove that not only are young people younger than old people, but they use slang. Would you, Adam and Eve? And not only that, but they use slang deriving from different languages. And I just think it's a real kvetch that a dork like this makes Wonga out of his shenanigans. Do you see how I did that? Yeah, it's because there's bits of young people in London, whereas in the years, who say, Governor, give you a good time for a farthing. And these days, they don't say that anymore. They ride up to you wearing their iPod on their skateboard, and they say, I don't believe it, man. You know what I mean? You're vexing the eye, man, and so forth. I'm told.
2 points. Linguists have identified a multi-ethnic dialect of English used by young people of all races that borrows words from Cockney, Jamaican Creole, Bengali and other languages. Conclusion is that language is a fluid entity, constantly evolving. This has been welcomed by poets, rappers and Scrabble cheats everywhere. Alan, why were the claws out for Santa this week?
Oh, is it this enlightened visionary government website?
Yes.
And it is very worried that teachers won't warn their children adequately against Santa Claus because he might frighten them. And also they mustn't spend money at Christmas because that's money that could be much better spent at, I don't know, Easter.
Why were children going to be frightened of Santa? He's an amiable old chap who gives presents.
When I took my daughter to see Santa in Harding and Hobbs, as it then was in the old days, when it was all made of wood and everything was free with your coupons.
Set him off now.
I took my daughter to Harding and Hobbs in Clapham Junction, and there was this weird Santa who, he said, what do you want for Christmas? And she said whatever it was, like Barbie, estate agent outfit or something. And he said, and then he said, don't talk to any strangers. I thought, well, that's a cheerful Christmas message. From a grown, out-of-work actor with a mouthless beard on and a child on his knee, telling my daughter not to talk to strangers. I thought, well, you're not exactly one of the family.
I've been Santa. I was Santa in Selfridge's Grotto about 10 years ago for a piece of thousands and thousands of words, you know. And these children were very shy and very frightened and really didn't want to see me, even though I didn't look like me, I looked like Santa. And a child about three came in, very uncertain, sat on my knee. And I said, what's your name? And she couldn't speak. And the bloke said, tell Santa your bloody name! Parents are awful. Yes,
so, you were Santa.
So Mr. Curran, Mr. Curran, you were pretending to be a Santa Claus. You say for a journalistic exercise, and you've done this for the last 50 years every year.
I met a very good Santa once who told me that he'd fallen on slightly hard times because somebody said...
It's January coming.
Well, no.
Advice on a government website for teachers to protect children from terrifying Santas has been rapidly withdrawn after a complaint. Many Christmas traditions which still exist today were introduced into this country by Prince Albert, who was famous for having his Christmas cracker pinned to his baubles. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the British Heart Foundation magazine, the current issue. It's an article headed, Let's Talk About Sex. A lot of people don't want to talk about erectile dysfunction, but they should do. It's a huge problem, if it really isn't that difficult to treat. It's just a question of raising the subject.
Clive.
This is from Anne Dawson. This is in a Liberal Democrats newsletter for Milnthorpe, Arnside, Storth, Sandside and Beetham in Cumbria. Following the closure of a quarter of public toilets across South Lakeland, local MP Tim Farron is campaigning to stop the closure of any more public toilets. Tim has presented several motions to Parliament and South Lakeland District Council.
Jeremy.
This was sent in February, and it's from Edwin Worley Birch. And his cutting is from the Sunday Times. Thailand's Chiang Mai Zoo has a novel way of dealing with elephant dung. The project manager has built an elephant-sized toilet and is potty training the animals. A five-year-old named Dew has already mastered the procedure and even flushes after use. Once all the elephants are trained, the zoo plans to put on a show.
Alan. I have something from the Newcastle Evening Chronicle. It says, police were called to the atrium of the Coronation Shopping Centre when internal security staff were unable to restrain a reindeer which was rolling around on the floor and shouting obscenities. The officers eventually managed to undress the two halves and separate the men inside. The front half, James Kerr, told them that the rear half, Warren O'Donnell, had been drinking during their lunch break and now refused to squeeze the battery-powered switch connected to the nose to make it flash on and off. If you are Rudolph, said Kerr, people expect you to have a red nose. Without it, you look bloody ridiculous.
Thank you. Now let's look at the final scores. And fittingly, for the season of goodwill, everyone has a perfect 16. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Barnsley Chronicle sent in by John Hudson.
Royston vicar Father John Hudson celebrates 25 years of ministry in the village this weekend. Father Hudson, who reckons there have been 2,000 funerals in his time at the church, celebrated the milestone with a party last weekend.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Green, Clive Anderson, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by George Cole, Simon Littlefield and Roderick Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.